Welcome back, ghosts, ghouls, and things that go bump in the night. Here at the Haunted Horror Storian, we are still knee-deep, figuratively, and at most points literally, in snow and winter weather. And while that's putting a bit of a damper on some of the outdoor activities I would like to be doing, it is giving me lots of time to think about what I want to do when the weather gets warm. Now, those of you who've been listening in for a while know how into the idea of urban exploration I am. And I definitely am. You know, there's just something so fascinating to me about walking through a place that used to be so bustling and lively that's now still and quiet, and just trying to figure out what happened here and why it's changed so much. So, when I read a story titled "Some Abandoned Towns Shouldn't Be Explored," you know I'm going to have to share it with you all. So, if you're going a little stir crazy, I think it's time you sit back, relax, and tune in for "Some Abandoned Towns Shouldn't Be Explored." I swear to you, man, it's an honest-to-God ghost town, just sitting out there. That was the line that hooked us. We'd been standing around at the pool table in our local bar, playing a few games and downing beers to celebrate the end of the week, when we heard the loud voice of Gerald Dwight, a local hunter, filtering over to us, amplified by the sudden web of silence that comes between songs playing over the jukebox. I looked up from the shot I'd been about to take to stare over my shoulder. He was sitting on one of the stools at the bar, talking to another hunter that I didn't know the name of, waving his arms around, a glass of beer precariously sloshing around in one hand. I was out tracking a stellar 4-point buck through the woods, and I looked down the hill to my left, and what do I see sitting in the valley? A dang ghost town, just sitting silent as a tomb with the afternoon sunlight glinting off the roofs and windows. I'm telling you, Mick, he poked his friend in the chest, I've been hunting up here 20 years. And I've never come across that place. I must have been blind to miss it. He ran a hand over his face, pressing his fingers into his eyes as if to prove his point. I exchanged a look with Carlos across the table, raising an eyebrow and jerking my head behind me. I could see a look of curiosity etched onto his face in the glow of the lights over the pool table. It was one echoed in the third member of our group, Aaron. I held up one finger and set the cue down on the table, turning around and walking over to the bar as the silence was broken by a country song coming on the speakers. I held up a hand to signal the bartender. Hey, Shelley, can I get one more Budweiser, please? I called as she turned her head to me. She nodded and I turned to the two men beside me. Hey, Jerry, did I hear you say something about a ghost town? I asked nonchalantly. The man turned to regard me with a look of confused irritation, but it melted away when he recognized me. Oh, how you doing, Terry? He said, reaching out a meaty hand to shake mine. Yeah, I was up hunting in the Lincoln Hills, going after what would have made an amazing pair of antlers to mount over my fireplace, and there's... nearest as I can tell, an abandoned, empty ghost town sitting in a valley below me. He scrunched up his brow and shook his head. Damnedest thing, though. The place didn't look that old. I never went down there, but it looked, well, new. He shrugged his shoulders, and as my beer was placed on the bar in front of me, I asked one more question as I tossed a crumpled 10 on the bar. Was it near one of the logging roads? He nodded. Yeah, I could see the McKinley logging road off to the right, actually, he said, then turned to his friend. Shoot, we should go up there sometime while hunting, Mickey boy. Seeing my exit, I picked up my beer, slapped Gerald on the shoulder and bid him good night, then rejoined my friends. You hear that? I asked the two of them as I leaned against the pool table and took a swig of my beer. They both nodded. Hell yeah, man, Carlos said, leaning up next to me. Aaron leaned on his pool cue. What are you thinking, bro? He asked. They both stared at me. I'm thinking, I began. I'm thinking we got about 5 hours of daylight left before dark. I glanced at my watch. Actually, 5.5 hours. Why don't we take a trip up there and check out this place for ourselves? Do a little bit of urban exploring. They exchanged a look between them, then shrugged. Beats staying around here all night, Aaron said. Besides, imagine the views we'll get on YouTube for exploring a possibly undiscovered ghost town, Carlos added. The guy had a small but dedicated channel on YouTube where he showed off abandoned towns, mines, and other places, garnering a few thousand subscribers. Wait a minute, though, Aaron interjected. Jerry said it was up near McKinley Road. There's absolutely no freaking way my car is gonna make it up there. Neither will Carlos Explorer. Those ruts will tear them both apart. I tilted my head at him and smiled and rolled my eyes. Did you forget I got my K5 back at my place? That thing will eat up those ruts and dips and make it back there perfectly fine. They exchanged another look, and both split into grins. Then what are we still doing here? Carlos exclaimed, drowning the last of his beer and throwing the bottle into a garbage bin. Let's go. And with that declaration, we filed out of the bar into Carlos Explorer and drove to my house. We all piled into the truck, and after making sure we had the equipment we might possibly need, drove through town and onto the logging roads. Many of them hadn't been used in decades. The lack of maintenance on the roads had caused the dirt to become pockmarked with ruts and dips, making it look like an acne-filled face of a teenager. Trees stretched over the road, some interlocking with each other like wooden fingers, and would occasionally scrape against the roof of the truck with a sickening sound as we passed through the thick portion. Very quickly, much of the late afternoon sun became blocked by the thick foliage, leaving much of our drive in shadow. As we drove, I pushed a CD into the player, filling the cabin with the voice of Brad Paisley. I navigated around the dips and dents, occasionally slowly crawling through them, and deep puddles where the road had become partially flooded by the previous night's rain. Aaron sat in the passenger seat, an old yellowed map detailing the logging roads in his lap. I'd bought it from a garage sale to help find my way around the backwoods when I went off-roading. Okay, if Jerry was right, it should be about 2 miles ahead of us, and if he saw it in the valley, he pointed to a spot detailed by the map. The only place I can think of would be here, in Barrett Valley. Carlos poked his head between us to look down at the map himself. You ever even hear about an abandoned town out here before? He asked, the question addressed to both of us. We both shook our heads. For the next 10 minutes, the music was the only thing besides the rumble of the truck's engine and the scrape of the tree branches. Then it was broken by Carlos, pointing his finger past us and out the windshield. Look, he said. It would have been so easy to miss, being almost completely overgrown, but he had spotted something. It was an offshoot road, clearly not been used in even longer than the road we were on. Good eye, Aaron cried, turning around and slapping him a high five. I stared at the road for a moment, though. tilting my head sideways. There was a strange feeling I was getting from looking at it. I couldn't place it exactly, but it felt just unnatural. Shaking it off, I turned off the radio, then reached down and shifted the four-wheel drive into low gear. "Well, here we go, guys," I said, then slowly turned onto it. I will forever kick myself for not paying attention to that feeling. I know now it was an instinctive warning, one I failed to heed. It became, if possible, even more slow-going. I could barely see the edges of the road, as the bushes had already begun to regrow in the middle of it, a sign that nature had long since begun to reclaim this for itself. I turned on the truck's headlights, along with the roof-mounted lights to help see where I was going. For about 10 minutes, that's all we saw, unending trees and bushes pressing in on us as though they were trying to trap us in place. Then they began to space out, and the road became visible again. What was strange, though, was that 2 minutes later, it changed from dirt to tarmac. I remember actually feeling so stupefied that I brought the truck to a stop for a minute, staring at the black road with yellow lines down the middle, before snapping myself out of my surprise, shifting back into two-wheel drive and continuing on. A minute later, we rounded the last corner and finally saw it. I brought the truck to a stop before a bridge leading into town, and all three of us leaned forward. Carlos whistled. "Wow. That's something I didn't expect to see," he breathed. I had to agree with him. I hadn't asked Gerald for details, but I never in a million years would have thought in my head of this. The place wasn't even close to small. It took up the entire length and width of the valley, and stretching out before us were rows upon rows of streets, houses sitting behind long overgrown lawns that looked like small jungles. Off to the left was what had to be downtown. At least 4 or 5 blocks were taken up by commercial buildings, along with what looked like a cinema and a community center. At the far end of town, we could see the faded white church spire rising above everything else. "Holy," Aaron mumbled. We looked at each other, then laughed softly. "We just hit the jackpot," Carlos exclaimed, reaching into his bag and pulling out his camcorder, beginning to film through the windshield. "You're not kidding," I added, then looked to my right. "Look," I said, pointing. Set right after the bridge was a medium-sized metal sign. In white letters that stood out from the blue background, it proclaimed, "Welcome to McCamey, population 12,463. "Dude," Aaron said as Carlos leaned forward to zoom in on the sign. "Not even our town has a population of 12,000 people." He looked around. "And this place looks too new to be from any more than 30 years ago." He was right. The design of the houses and the commercial buildings looked far newer than any abandoned town I'd stumbled across. "So why do you think it's empty and we've never heard about it before?" I asked, turning around in my seat to look at Carlos. He shrugged, running his free hand through his short brown hair. "Maybe it was a planned expansion of the area that never came to be? Maybe it was meant to be a new development, but the company or people financing it ran out of money and had to abandon it." The idea somewhat soothed the eerie feeling that gazing over the town had filled me with. Carlos was right. He had to be. Just some rich idiot's pet project that bankrupted him. Repeating that thought in my mind, I slowly pressed on the gas, and we crossed over the bridge, which rattled slightly, into town. Now, if you ever got to see how eerie it looked to see what should have been a populated area completely deserted, take that and amplify it times 10. and you'll have an idea of how it felt to drive through McCamey. The noise of the truck's engine and exhaust bounced and echoed off the buildings and surrounding hills back at us through the open windows we'd lowered to let the cool air inside and for Carlos to film. We crisscrossed through some of the residential streets first, looking to see if any abandoned cars were parked in driveways or anything of the sort, but we never saw any. All we saw were the houses, which seemed to have a relatively modern design to them, but aged by the elements, paint ripped off the sides and gutters hanging precariously off the roofs. More than a few had their windows broken. I noticed that some were broken inwards instead of out, as I saw no broken glass amongst the tall grass and weed-infested front yards. Then we stopped at the church. Its white paint was fading as well, and the front door stood wide open. We could see inside, where visible in the light gloom, many of the pews had been upturned. The pulpit had been destroyed, likely by vandals, I thought, and the statue of Jesus crucified on the cross was barely visible behind its remains, having been knocked to the floor. I shifted my eyes from the mess inside to the announcement sign at the end of the walkway leading up to it. The glass had fogged with many years of disuse, but I could just barely make out the white letters which had been set up behind it. Save yourself from the pestilence. God is here to offer you salvation. I couldn't understand why, but I unwillingly shuddered reading it, a chill shooting up my back. The guys had noticed it as well. What do you think they meant by the pestilence? Carlos asked, zooming in on the side. I said, for some reason unwilling to look back at the church. The shuddering feeling came over me again. To use the old phrase, it felt as though someone had just walked over my grave. Aaron looked at his phone. Well, we've got about 2 hours of daylight remaining. You want to go check out the downtown area? I let out a deep breath I hadn't realized I'd been holding, then nodded. Yeah. Why don't we go check that out, then get back to town? I honestly don't want to drive those logging roads after dark. They accepted my answer and turned away. But I knew I'd been full of it. It had nothing to do with the logging roads. It was here I didn't want to be in when the sun went down. I put the truck in drive, and with just a little too much of a push on the gas, pulled away from the curb. We drove back down the main boulevard towards the downtown area. About 5 minutes later, we had pulled into a faded parking space in the downtown square. Dirty windows concealed the surrounding buildings' interiors, but the signs above, as broken and dirty as they were, still showed what they had been. Just from our space, we saw a laundromat, a library, the town newspaper building, what looked like a video rental store, a repair garage, a convenience store, and at the end of the square, the community center. Kicking open my door, I hopped out and made my way back to the truck as the others hopped out. So, where do you want to start? I asked, glancing at my watch. We've got about an hour or so to check this out, if we want to get back before nightfall. The two of them looked around, Carlos already holding up his camera. Well, I was thinking of starting with the library, then making my way to the newspaper building. Could help to find out when this place was abandoned from there, if this place ever even had residents. I scrunched up my mouth a bit. I loved libraries, but I spent enough time in one in the living town, let alone in one long since deserted. I glanced around. Okay, here's what we'll do then. You two go check out the library and the newspaper office. Watch your backs and don't get separated. I motioned down to the other end of the square. I'm gonna go check out the garage and the video store. Carlos gave me a worried look. How are we gonna stay in touch though, in case anything happens? I reached back into the truck before slamming the tailgate closed. I handed Carlos a radio. The second, I clipped to my belt before turning on. That's how, I said before tapping it. Keep it turned to channel 4, that's what I'm on. They nodded, and after a final exchange of "be safe," we parted ways. I watched them walk across the road and climb the steps of the massive wooden front doors of the library, then began walking down the middle of the road after they had slipped inside. Now that I was alone, the town seemed to have an even more eerie feeling to it. "This place doesn't feel like one that was built and then just abandoned," I thought to myself as my boots crunched over dead leaves which had accumulated on the asphalt. Listening to the wind whistle and my footsteps echo, it almost feels more like it had been lived in first, and was now just dead. I couldn't put a finger on why I felt that way. It just was almost an intuition. As I headed for the garage, the wind whistled around me, and I felt a shudder go up my spine. I stopped, then turned and looked at the windows of what had to be the apartments over the stores. They stood dark and unmoving, no shapes in them. I almost wished there had been figures in them. It would have been far less creepy. Shaking my head, I turned back and walked a little faster until I reached the garage. Both bay doors were shut, and the windows on top of them were too high to see through, so I headed for the cracked glass door where customers would enter. Flicking on my flashlight, I turned the handle. It opened after a moment of tugging, causing a bell hooked on the inside of it to ring. I stepped inside and looked around as it shut, the sound echoing in the stillness. Directly in front of me stood the main counter, where the mechanic would greet customers. Sitting atop of it was the monitor for a computer, with a rack of part boxes and oil behind it. Shelves lined one side of the room with bottles and boxes that had their labels long since rotted or peeled away, as did posters on the wall. Wait a minute. I turned my flashlight back to the counter. I focused the beam on the computer monitor. What? I shook my head slightly, but I wasn't seeing things. It was a flat screen monitor, not one of the boxy units from the 80s, 90s, or even the early 2000s. That's... How the hell did that get there? I crossed the floor and vaulted over the counter, turning to look at it. It was indeed a newer model flat screen monitor, the Dell logo still visible beneath the layer of dust covering it. I couldn't see the tower, only the monitor and the keyboard. Shaking my head, I turned away and stepped through the door leading to the repair bays. I shone the light around the dark, expansive room. The beam glinted off something metal in the far bay. There was a vehicle sitting up on the far lift. I crossed the room quickly, stepping over spilled oil and other fluids until I stood just below it. I felt an even larger sense of confusion and shock course over me as I stared up at... What? I wasn't looking at an older car or truck. I was looking at a Cadillac Escalade. And not one of the older ones, either. This was a brand new Escalade, a generation that had only been out for 2 or 3 years. But it looked much older than that. The undercarriage was coated what had to have been years, if not decades, of rust and corrosion. And the paint on the side was faded, as though it had sat outside in the beating sun for countless summers. Feeling a massive sense of unease wash over me like a tsunami, I stepped back around and aimed the light at the license plate on the back of the SUV. The sticker on the plate indicating what year it would expire was illegible. It had faded too much to read. Feeling like insects were crawling under my skin, I turned and quickly left the garage, banging open the door a little too hard and causing the bell to jangle loudly. Another shiver went up my spine, and I looked around. But the streets remained empty. Reaching down, I pulled the radio from my belt and pressed the transmit button. Hey guys? I called, my voice shaking slightly. There's something really rather weird going on here. The radio crackled with static. You're telling me, I heard Carlos' voice filter through. There's what look like newer computers at the circulation desk for the library, and some of the books we found, neither of us have ever heard of before in our lives. I heard him laugh, still holding down the button. This place is wild. I've gotten some great footage of it all. I spoke to the radio, willing my voice to stay level. That's great, man. You guys ready to get out of here now? The answer I received was not the answer I wanted. Just give us 5 more minutes, Terry. Please, we just entered the newspaper office. It's our last stop. I wanted to tell him to take the newspaper office and shove it, but I couldn't. He was my friend, and he sounded too excited. Just give him 5, and then you can be gone. I thumbed the radio. All right, but just 5, okay? Copy that, I heard Carlos say. But behind that, I heard something else. I heard what must have been Aaron coughing heavily. Hey, Aaron all right? I asked. Yeah, he's fine. We must have kicked up something from the library floor, he said, and then clicked off the radio. Well, that's great, I thought, sighing and looking around again. A cold gust of wind hit me, and I pulled up my collar to shield myself. I hate how this place feels so... just... dead. I strode quickly back across the square into the video store, wanting to see in there anyways. Looking up, I could barely make out the name. Nostalgia Video. Pulling open the dirt-smeared door, I stepped inside and shone my light around. There was a circular desk at the front of the store, with aisles stretching out behind it. I began to walk towards it when the light reflected off of something stuck inside one of the windows. I turned and saw it reflected off of dust and dirt-covered movie posters. Maybe see what movies they were advertising last. Trying to take my mind off the sense of unease slowly being replaced with a, for the life of me I couldn't understand why, existential dread, I crossed the room and using the sleeve of my coat, wiped away enough so it could be read. Stepping back, I stopped, trying to process what I was looking at. I stared in confusion. The Nun 2? I blinked rapidly, biting my lower lip. I'm a huge movie buff, and I knew for a fact that there was no movie that had come out in the last few decades called that. There was a movie called The Nun, which had come out in 2018, and there was supposed to be a sequel coming out later this year, but this makes no sense. I turned and looked at the bottom of the poster, at the smaller lettering. 20th Anniversary Re-Release? Rent it now on Blu-ray and virtual video disc. My jaw dropped open. What is going on? I whispered. Okay, Ter, time to get out of here. Now. Turning and feeling as though I'd just stepped off a roller coaster, I stumbled out of the store and into the fading light. I put my hand to my head and took deep breaths, trying to steady myself. That's when the door to the newspaper office across the street burst open, but I stopped when I saw Aaron and Carlos dashing down the steps. The looks on their faces made whatever I was about to say die in my throat. Both of them had pale, terrified expressions on their faces, as though they had just seen a monster or a murder. Carlos had something clenched in one hand. Guys, what the... I began, but they tore past me, screaming for me to follow them. Not knowing what else to do, I sprinted to catch up to them as they ran towards the community center. They reached the hulking building and slammed into each other as they tore for the handle of the fading yellow doors. Move! Let me open it! I heard Aaron shout. You get out of the way! Carlos screamed back at him. I was about to step in and pull them both back when one of them, I'm honestly not sure which, managed to tear the right side door open. I reached around them and pulled the left door back, staring inside, and do I wish I hadn't. The inside of the community center was one giant room, a bubble glass roof which had long since broken, providing light inside. Broken glass and leaves littered the floor beneath it, and tables had been shoved all to one side of the room. It was drenched in gloom, but not gloomy enough to hide what lay inside, and our flashlight beams made sure to leave no doubt. The entire town's population looked to be here. They were scattered across the floor, with many in the center huddled around each other. As messed up as it was, I almost wished they'd been rotting corpses. It would have shown they hadn't been dead long, but they weren't. They were all skeletons. I began shaking, feeling as though someone were pouring ice water down my back nonstop. Behind them was a white banner, one which read in black letters, "Emergency Shelter." I looked from the horrifying sight to Carlos, my eyes wide and my breath coming in ragged gasps, trying to find something, I don't know what, in his gaze. He looked at me, his eyes as wide as mine, and wordlessly handed me what he'd been holding. As I stared at it, I felt my jaw drop open, and the flashlight I'd been holding fell from my hand, smashing and breaking on the ground. For a moment longer, we all just looked at each other, the only sound we heard being the ghostly whistle of the wind. And then, we ran. We all dashed across the square, the sound of our feet echoing in the deadly stillness, reaching the truck and leaping inside. Jamming the key into the ignition, I slammed on the gas. I almost flipped the truck with how sharply I turned the wheel, swerving back to the road leading out of town, sending us airborne over the bridge before crashing back in a shower of sparks. "My camera!" Carlos cried suddenly, looking behind him, but there was no way I was going back for it. I kept my foot down, smashing through the bushes and trees until we came to the logging road, then turned into it, and not caring about my truck at all, I flew it back down into town. As soon as we made it back, I immediately drove to the police station. I must have looked like an absolute madman bursting through the doors, but luckily the sheriff knew me and didn't pull his gun on me. Stammering, almost blubbering, I managed to get out what I could. I knew I sounded absolutely insane, but I needed to tell them. I had to. I could tell they didn't believe a word I said, but even still, they sent a few deputies up into the hills with their off-road cruiser to investigate. When they came back, they shrugged their shoulders at me. "There's nothing up there, Terry," one told me. "Nothing but an empty valley." I wanted to press, but I let it go. They'd just assumed we'd had one too many drinks, maybe even eaten some shrooms and ended up seeing things. In the back of my mind, I knew they'd never find anything, even though I'd wanted them to. There was a reason for it. The object Carlos had handed me, which I'd stupidly dropped as I ran, had been a yellowed newspaper. The headline read, "National death toll rises to 190 million as president declares martial law." That wasn't what cut through me like a knife, making me feel as though all I knew and believed was crashing down around me. It was the date at the top of the paper. July 22nd, 2047. That all happened over a year ago. When they'd come back and told us they found nothing, the three of us made a pact, vowing to never speak again about what we had seen. We all felt like it'd be better that way. So, why, after all this time, am I breaking it? Why am I telling about my experience here, telling you all of this when I've spent months trying to forget? I guess as a warning, for two reasons. The first, I just recently learned about the concept of a time slip, an overlap of the past, or future, and the present. And the second, because just last week, there was a town hall meeting. It was to introduce us residents to a wealthy landowner who's just moved here. I went out of sheer curiosity. He spoke about how he'd purchased a large slice of former logging land to develop a new town, one to attract more people to our area. He even showed artist renditions of what he wanted it to look like. When I saw them, I began to shake violently as the existential dread that I felt that day returned in spades. At the top of the concept art was the name he intended to choose for it. I'll let you guess what it was. And that, listeners, is why some abandoned towns shouldn't be explored. So, do you think Terry found a time slip? A portal to the future? Or maybe a wormhole to a parallel universe? I hope, given what he knows, he can prevent what might be coming. So, my lovely listeners, what did you all think of this week's episode? Do you want to hear more stories about urban exploration or time slips in parallel universes? Do you have a story of your own that you think would fit well in the Emporium? If so, please send me a message. You can always find me on Facebook at Haunted Horror Historian, or you can send me an email at hauntedhorrorhistorian@gmail.com. Well, I think that's probably enough for this week. So, until next time, my friends, stay spooky. Maybe stay off of logging trails. And remember, sometimes it's more than just a story.